This is part 9 of the 13 pillars, the 9th Yesod, known as Petek HaTorah, according to one translation, the immutability of Torah, or the permanence, the unchangeability of Torah. The Torah is unchanging. This is probably one of the most controversial of all the Yesodos, certainly the one that's gotten us into the most hot water with non-Jews. All the religions of the world, except for the Druze and the Jews, proselytize, if only to reinforce through numbers of believers what the religions lack in logic or reason or substance. But we maintain that this Yesod negates that concept. Certainly the religions of the world that have adopted our Torah and then adapted it to their own needs are in violation of this principle. And the non-Orthodox movements, I have to say, are also in breach of this because they maintain the Torah is extremely flexible and adaptable in each generation, depending on the particular perspective they have. Either it was a series of principles that were always meant to evolve, or Rahman al-Islam's reform hold that it's not divine to begin with, it's just the collected wisdom of human beings, then why should any group of human beings presume to rule indefinitely in perpetuity over another group of human beings? So therefore, it changes. But this Yesod enunciates the concept that our Torah is immutable, unchangeable, permanent, and can never be nullified. So if so, there are two issues that we have to deal with in understanding it. Firstly then, what about the Darabonans? What about the great variety of Jewish life that and practice that exists even in the Orthodox world? So we can say the Torah doesn't change. It's a nice Yesod. But the truth is, whoever thinks that it's the same practice, the same Avodah Hashem today as it was in the time of the Midbar, is delusional, because clearly it's not so. I gave a shiur a year ago on the triennial cycle, and one of the achronim I quoted then, I won't mention him now, said that to him it's clear that the triennial cycle that the Gemara refers to was just a mistake. They had forgotten how to divide the Torah, because the division of Parshios comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe decided, Shmos, Vayera, Bo, Bashalach, Yisro, etc. That came from Moshe. There's really no source for that, but he maintains it because there is a thread in Jewish life, especially in Hungarian Orthodox Jewish life, that says that everything that is always was. But that's not true. We've had changes as well. So if that's the case, how could the Torah be immutable if we see changes before our eyes? How do we distinguish? What are the parameters of machlokes, of takanos, of minhagim, etc., all of which give a flavor to Jewish life, a different nuance to Jewish life, and sometimes completely different practices in Jewish life. So we'll look at that. And we'll look at, of course, our perception of the other religions, especially those that have claimed descent from Judaism. There's no doubt the senses played a role in this Yesod as well, as we'll see. It's a very sensitive area. Once you say the Torah does not change, and it is as God gave us, then of course it's going to offend those who took the Torah and changed it quite willfully. Let's look at number one, and we have here two versions of the Yesod. The first one of Reb Shmuel Ibn Tibbon, Rishon, a later contemporary of the Rambam, who translated the Rambam's works and others from Arabic to Hebrew. So this is in his translation of Parakhelik, of course. He says the ninth Yesod, once I should say we're sponsored as always by Becky Navikatz, Lilish Masyona ben Reb Aryeh Leib. So this Yesod, the ninth, ha-hetek. Hetek here means transmission or transcription. La-hatik means the copy. V'huki ha-Torah zos mu'atekes meis ha-borei Hashem Yisbarach. Lo mizu lo so. But this we got transcribed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not from any other source. Ve'aleha ein l'hosif, u'mimena ein l'groa. We cannot add to it, nor detract from it. Lo b'tar shebichsav, lo b'tar shebalpeh. Neither in the written Torah, nor the oral Torah. Shemer lo tasifu lo v'lo tigra mimenu, u'kvar be'arnu ma'shar tzarech levar b'yisod zeh, b'psicha zeh chibur. He says at the beginning of the parish of Mishnah, he's already explained this at length, and in fact the Rambam did at length explain it. In his Hakdama to the Mishnah generally, he spoke about the Torah Shebaal Peh and its framework, and the Masorah as well. One question always comes up for the teenagers on seminar. The question is always asked, how do we know the Torah today is the same as it was in Moshe's time? Right? So if you play the game of telephone, then invariably the message that the first one sent is not the message that the 30th received. So if we received the Torah over 3,300 years ago with the Masorah, so how do we know it's the same thing today, based on the Tisod? So the Rambam essentially answers that question without raising it explicitly. And there he says it's because you see that there really were only, I think, 40 generations from Moshe, or 40 individuals, from Moshe's time to Rav Ashi's time to Sof Talmud. 40 people is not a lot of people. And it's not as if there's a message that's whispered, but rather Masorah was conveyed to the Gadol, or the Gadolim of every generation. Those who are most intelligent, most astute, most equipped to receive the Masorah. So therefore, it's not as if we could posit, like as children play, the message will be garbled. It's exactly the opposite. Care was taken, great care was taken, that the message should not be garbled. And that's Torah Shebaal Peh. In terms of Torah Shebichsav, so you see how fanatic, how obsessive we are about a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah can't be used as a word missing or added, if there's a letter that's not completely clear, if there's a break in the letter, it can't be used. That testifies to the extreme care that we took in maintaining the purity of the Torah. Granted, Chazal say that chaseres v'yaseros, which we have above here, yud here, something that doesn't affect the meaning of the word, like you have a word tachra in Devarim that's spelled in some place with a hey, our meaning's with an olive, but it's not as if you'll find in the Seres HaDibros, you know, that there's Sufrei Torah that do not say lo before tignov, that you don't have. You'll have changes, deviations, chaseres v'yaseros, that don't affect, according to what we paskin, the integrity of the Sefer Torah, but not in terms of the substance at all. So according to this Yesod, as Rav Shmuel Ibn Tibon interpreted the Rambam, it's ha-hetek, it's the precision in copying and transmitting the Torah. Number two is Rav Yosef Kapach, Zichron Levracha's translation of the Rambam from Arabic to Hebrew. And he says the Yesod is not hetek, but bitul. I could look up the Arabic word, if you're interested, that they disputed what the translation would be, but why would it affect us? We don't speak Arabic. Bitul is different. Bitul is not hetek. Hetek means precision of transmission. Bitul means abrogation, the nullification of the Torah. In other words, v'hu, shezu taras Moshe lo tibatel. The Torah will never be abrogated, never nullified. V'lo tava Torah meis Hashem zulasa. And we will not receive another Torah from God. So we add nothing to this Torah that we have, nor do we subtract anything from the Torah that we have. Not in what's written, nor in its commentary. And he says again that this is explained in the Hakdama. So you see there's a difference. Bittul is a much stronger word than hetek. It's a stronger way of making the point. In a sense, if we just look at Ibn Tibon's translation of hetek, it conceals or obscures the main point. To say that Masorah is precise is a positive way of saying what this Yesod is actually underscoring. It's that the Torah does not change. The Torah is exact, the Torah is perfect, and we don't have the right to change it. Look at the Rambam in number 3, in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph, Dovor Borur Umefurish Petarshi Mitzvah Omedes La'olam U'La'olme Olamim. It's clear and self-explanatory in the Torah that it remains forever and ever. Ein lo lo shinui v'lo gera'on v'lo tosefes. There's no change, there's no subtraction, there's no addition. The pasuk says, "It's called the Lord Hashanach mitzaveh etzchem osa tishmu maaseos lo sasefa lo v'lo sigra mimenu." Whatever I've commanded you, God says, that's what it is. You should not add to it nor take away from it. Haniglos lonu uvanenu arolam maaseos is called dira Torah zos. The niglos, what's revealed to us, is this Torah and its mitzvos. Olamadata shekol dira Torah mitzuvin anu lasasan arolam. To teach us that all the words of the Torah are commanded to do them forever. Chukas olam udarosechem, as the Torah says a number of times, it's an eternal statute in all your generations. It says also lo mashamayim hi, holamadata, she'ein novi rashay lechadish dover me'ata. Since the Torah is no longer in heaven, it's been given to us, no prophet can claim that he's received a prophecy to amend the Torah. Lefichach im yamod ish bein min omos bein mi Yisrael, if a man should arise, whether a non-Jew or a Jew, v'yasa osu mofes, and of course we'd listen to him if he was just showing up at the door of the shul, lest he starts performing wonders and miracles, magician. V'yomar, and he says, Shashem shalacho, God sent him, lahosef mitzvah, oh, God sent him to add a mitzvah, oh, legra mitzvah, or to take away. Actually, we have all those types, where people show up and say, some mitzvahs no longer exist, and others come and say, they're new mitzvahs. Or, lefarish, the mitzvah and mitzvahs perish, shalosh shamanami Moshe, or to interpret the Torah in a way that Moshe did not, that is to say, not in accordance with the Mesorah as we received it. O Shema Shoson, a mitzvah shenitzav mi Yisrael, eina la'olam uladori doros, ela mitzvahs lefi zman hoyu, where it tells the mitzvahs we were commanded were not for eternity, but rather just for that time, hareza novi sheker, all these various permutations of the possible distortions are the sign of a false prophet, because he's come to deny Moshe's prophecy and he's killed the Chenek. God is not a man that he would lie. The Torah is what it is. So no changes in the Torah, even if a person who performs wonders comes and says the Torah has changed. Yes?
Is there a legally defined scope of what the Torah Shabbat is?
Yes, we'll discuss that in a couple moments, what the Torah Shabbat is, what its parameters are. If you look at 4, the Rambam just highlights, it's in the third parak of Hilchos Teshuvah Halacha Ches, Shlosha Heina Kofrim B'Torah, there are three types of people who are deniers of Torah. One we discussed last time, the one who says, Ein Torah Mim Hashem, Torah is not from God, even a pasuk or a word. And the person who denies Torah Shabbat Peh. And finally, Ha'omer Shabore Hechelif Mitzvah Zob or Mitzvah Cheres. Person who comes and says that the Creator exchanged one mitzvah for another, Ukvar Batla Torah Zo, and this Torah that you now have, this teaching, this law, this mitzvah, is now Betela, nullified. Even though it came from God, kegan ha'hagarim, like the Ishmaelites, like the Muslims, kolechem yishlosha elu kofer b'Torah. All these three are considered kofrim, violators of Torah. Now, if you look at the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah on the point of lobas shamayim, we start to see you start to open up the area a little more. Great, lobas shamayim, very nice. But we all know the famous Gemara by Metziah Daf Nun Testament Beis, Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbanon, Rabbi Yeshua got involved in, about Tanur Sho'ach Na'ai, and the Chachamim Paskim like Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Eliezer appealed for heavenly intercession. And in fact, the Baskol rang out, the halachas like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua responded, Lo Bashamayim hi. Ramin and Hassam, my Lo Bashamayim hi. Why would we pay attention to that heavenly echo? Omer Birmiya ain't Mashgichim Bavasko, because we don't pay any attention to the Basko. V'chol shekein dei mashkichim benovi hamisnabe. So baskol is a form of nevuah. We don't pay attention to that. Alachas kama v'kama, we're not going to pay attention even to a person who is going to say the Torah is changed. Now, lo bashamayim exists in a certain context. In this case, it relates to the matters of adjudicating disputes in Torah. We don't appeal to anything supernatural to try to resolve the questions that we have. Rather, the mechanism for resolving conflicts of laws lies within our Mesorah. In other words, Lo Bashamayim means that the revelation is over, the Torah is given over to man, that's the Mesorah, and we resolve it. Baal Tosef relates not to methods of adjudication, but to the integrity of the Torah itself. Now, it's interesting that we wouldn't pay attention to a baskol, because in fact we all know that at certain times we did. What's the most famous case? Machlokas Beisum Beishamai. That machlokas between those two great houses was resolved through a baskol. Tosa says in Yevamos Daf Yedalet Amud Aleph, number 6, Vim Tomar, Umay Shino Delo Kaimuon Kebaskol de Rabbi Eliezer, Ela Amrina Bechol Duchte de Shamutihu. Why don't we pay attention to the baskol of Eliezer? Rather, we say that his words are considered excommunicated. Ein Alocha Kemoso, Uchebaskol de Beis Hillel, Kaimuon, Da Alocha Kebeis Hillel. The Basco resolved that dispute that raged for 3.5 years between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. The Basco did paskin, so why don't we say they're also Lo Bashamayim? So Tosfos has a number of answers. Yeshlomo Mishum the Basco, Rabbi Eliezer Lo Yotza El Chvodo. That there the Basco did not come to paskin, but just to uphold his honor. It's a little stretch. Shomar Min Hashemayim Yochichu. Kedamar Hassan. So there the Gemara, there Tosfos maintains here, it's possible to say that the Baskol there was not trying to adjudicate Rabbi Eliezer's favor, but rather that his opinion should not just be rejected outright. But that doesn't seem to be the shot in the Gemara. Inami bahi Baskol shahaisa keneged rabim derabonon havu rubo devarein halacha. So now he says something different. But there the Baskol that said halacha Rabbi Eliezer was trying to rule against the majority. So there you can't say the halacha is like a minority in favor of a majority because of achay rabim lahatos. I will kebaskol the Beis Hillel kaimelon mishum de havu Beis Hillel ruba. But the baskol that ruled in favor of Beis Hillel, that's acceptable because Beis Hillel was the rove. So if they were the rove, why did they not just rule accordingly? Elo de Beis Shammai mechadidek tveis. The Gemara in Erevin, which takes up this area, the Tosfos is quoting, says that Beis Hillel was sharper. I'm sorry, Beis Shammai was sharper. That is to say, they were more logical. Their svaros were more logical than Beis Hillel's. But nonetheless, the halacha mechadidek tveis. The halacha was, the psak was in accordance with Beis Hillel. Now, why was that? So Rav Kook explains in Mishpat Kohen in his Tshuvos, this is in Sadi Beis, that there are two conditions where the baskol will be utilized. One is where the baskol is a spontaneous communication. And that was like in the case of Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. It says they argued for 3.5 years without resolution. But 3.5 years is it's a long time. And the baskol just was omitted. And it was spontaneous. As opposed, Rav Kook said, to the case in Bab Metzia, where there was a specific request made by Rabbi Eliezer that min hashamayim yochichu. Secondly, it only is a factor when both sides of the argument offer cogent and fully formed and equally valid points. So then the machlokas is a pure one. Elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim. And the question becomes, only the halacha l'maaseh. In certain cases, it's mutually exclusive, but you need to have one way to act. Now, the Rambam doesn't accept this point of Rav Kook, but there's another way to look at it, a clearer way that I heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, and that is the baskol here could never resolve a machlokas because of lo bashamayim. It's ein mashkichim bevaskol. All the baskol did was remove Beis Shammai as a gav in the machlokas. as if Beis Shammai didn't exist anymore. Once it didn't exist, then halacha is by default, according to Beis Hillel, that there is no longer a bar plukta. Now we have to understand generally the area of machlokas. That wasn't that Basco. That's a medrash that Allah said Lavo that in the future will hold possibly like Beis Shammai, probably just to get them to go away. I don't know. But there is such a medrash like that, but that's not in that Gemara. The other Gemara just says the Basco rang out Elu va Elu Dirul Kimchaim Bahlocho Kabesilo. It's Ervin Dafyud Gimel Mbez. So that was the machlokas. Later on, what'll happen in the future, that's problematic because Allah is not going to change. If it's like Beis Hillel, it's like Beis Hillel. I should tell you, interesting point, as an aside, so why then was halacha like Beis Hillel? If Beis Shammai is Mechayev Tzvei, so Gemara says that they were kinder, they were gentler, they were more willing to hear the other side. In other words, they always taught Beis Shammai's opinion first and then gave their own opinion. So why is that, why does that play any role in Sa'at? Yikov Adin Sahar, who cares who's nicer? We want to know who's more right. So the pshat is, I heard from my Rebbe that you see where the machlokas is a pure one and an even one, and there's no machriya on either side, then in fact the machriya can be something that's a limud and midas. And you see the halach was like Beis Hillel from the Basco. You learn midas from Beis Hillel, the way they acted towards Beis Shammai. So that could be, that it's not that becomes the machriya, but the machriya is, the deciding factor is something that will give rise to another limud, a limud in terms of morals. That's why it does not happen that often, that's correct. Usually machlokos take on a life of their own. Now why they exist, that we have to understand, because it certainly plays a role in this notion of the immutability of Torah. Look at number 7, it's the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, Perak Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Beis Din HaGadol, Shel Yerushalayim, Hein Iker Torah Shebaal Peh. The Beis Din HaGadol of Sanhedrin, they were the essence of the Torah Shebaal Peh, Amudei HaHara, Umehem Chokul Mishpat Yotzei L'chol Yisrael. From them emanated all teaching, all laws, all decisions to Israel. And listen, the Torah says, Al Piat Torah Sheyarucha, Shemitzah Sey, V'chol Amamim V'Moshe Rabbeinu V'Torah So Chai V'Lismoch Masei Adas Alehen V'Lishayin Alehen. Whoever believes in Torah's Moshe is obligated to rely on their decisions, to lean on them. If there is a dispute, they're the ones ultimately who resolves it. Now, in truth, we are a little uncomfortable with authority today, certainly in the Western world, so some of this is foreign to us, but it's natural to Yadus. I mean, part of the problem that modern Jews have, even modern Orthodox Jews have, is a discomfort level that we have with ultimate authority, since we want to make our own decisions. But nonetheless, Yadus is not set up that way. You know, we fudge the issue by, if we have a question, going from rabbi to rabbi till we hear what we want, or choosing rabbis that we know will answer a certain way and asking him those questions, even if they're not normally our rabbis. But nonetheless, let's see halacha gimel. Dibre Kabbalah ein behen machlokas la'olam. Dibre Kabbalah means those things which come to us on authorized tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu. Another way of saying Dibre Kabbalah is Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. So I'm simplifying somewhat, but not entirely. Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai is not just a phrase, it's a formula. It means something that Moshe taught that was not written down in the Torah explicitly. There we say Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, and on those things, the Gemara has a list, on those things of which we say Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, there's never any machlokas. There's never machlokas whether an esrog is an esrog, or a lemon, or a peach, or an orange. There's no machlokas recorded, what's a lulav? There's no machlokas whether tefillin should be round or square. There's no machlokas on all these things that are part of Divrei Kabbalah, Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, Ein Bahem Machlokas La'olam. So the Choldova Shetimsa Ba Machlokas, the Adua She'eno Kabbalah Mimoshe Rabbeinu. Anything on which is a machlokas, you can know there's no full tradition from Moshe. Udvarim Shelemedim in Adin, something that you learn from analogy, from Yudim Umidos, Shatar Nidreshes Bohem, Im Eskimu Aleim, based on Adoro Kulon, Hare Eskimu. If they all agree, fine. If not, then you hold Nachar HaRov, and the din follows the Rabbim, the majority. So to Gzera Satakonos from Inhogos in Ro Mixos and Sheroi Ligs or Gzera or the Saka in Takono or Shinichu Alma Minagazer, or if they decide to ordain something or decree something or just promulgate a custom in a certain area, if some of them feel that it's appropriate and some feel that it's inappropriate, then they'll decide, and they'll go after the Rov also, and other factors to see whether Tzibur can accept it, the number of heirs. But those are takonos, those are minhagim. You'll see all the machlokos arise, I shouldn't say all, but most overwhelmingly arise in the area of gzeros, takonos, minhagos. You could have a machlokos on a certain prot, a detail of a mitzvah d'oraisa, but they're much more common in areas that that are applications of the mitzvos, and that mitzvos directly. So, halacha dalid, number 9, kishahoya based on agadol kayom lohaisa machlokas b'Yisrael. When the Sanhedrin agadol existed, there never was a machlokas amongst the Jewish people. Because kaldin shenolad b'sofek lecha m'Yisrael, if a Jew had a doubt, he was unsure about a particular din, he would ask his local beis din. They told him, good. They didn't tell him, he'd go to a larger base in his vicinity, and then to Yerushalayim, and to the base in Arbayis, and then the base in Pesach Hazara, and finally, Lishas HaGozish, the base in Agadol there, the base in Agadol that sat in the chamber of hewn stone, right on the Harabayis, on the edge of the Harabayis. And the Beis in Agadol, again, they would answer him, Ben mipi Kabbalah, Ben mipi Amida, Shadonu Ba, Omri Miyad. If they knew the answer, based on the Mesorah, or based on one of the 13 Midos that are used to expound the Torah, they would say it. Im Lohoya Hadova Bor Eitzel Beis in Agadol, but if they did not know it, they were unsure, then Donim Bo B'Shaton, Venosu Venosu Medova, Arach Yeskimu Kulon. Then they would adjudicate the matter, in their time, they would discuss it until they came to a unanimous agreement, and if not, Yamdu Leminyan Ve'yech Acha Harov, again, they follow the majority, and they tell the questioners, Kach Halocha V'holchen Lohen, Mishabot L'Beisin Agadol, Rav Samachlokas B'Yisrael, Zemetah Me'Venosin Tamudvarv, Zemetah V'Venosin Tamudvarv, Zaoseh V'Zematir. Once the Beisin Agadol went out of existence in Herod's time, then the machlokos proliferated amongst the Jewish people. In fact, that's when the machlokos Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel started, when he forced the Sanhedrin underground, and Beis Hillel, Hillel was the Nasi, and Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai arose. Then you had no means of adjudicating these decisions. Someone would say Tohar and give good rias for it. Someone would say Tomei, also give good rias for it. And so it remains until today. Now, there are two approaches basically to machlokas that I discussed in a shiur 2 years ago. So you were all there, I don't want to repeat it, but just, no one was here, just telling a joke. No one was here, but just to be brief, because the shiur stands by itself, one is to say that the machlokas come from a paucity of understanding, from a dearth of intellect or diligence in study. The Rambam seems to imply this in his Hakdama, that in fact, if everyone studied perfectly, learned well, there could not be a machlokes, because ish v'pi ish, everybody would receive the exact same Torah. That's what the Rambam says there. He seems to imply differently elsewhere, but that's what he says there, and there's some understanding, there's some merit to that, because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the point of the Rambam, in fact, synopsized here, is that when the Beis Din Agadol went underground, then, in fact, the Gemara there blames it on the Talmidim of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, that they were not mishamesh their rebbeim sufficiently. In other words, if they had the ability to be mishamesh well, then no machlokos would have arose. But because they did not, therefore machlokas arose. So essentially it's a negative proposition. In a perfect world, machlokas would not exist. There's another approach entirely. Another approach entirely that I think fits much better with us living in 5770, and that's the Yerushalmi. Note, it's Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, the fourth parak. Note that the Torah was not given to us as a law book. It's not like the U.S. Code. The U.S. Code, yeah, it's annotated, you have people discussing it, but it's not given in terms of opinions. It's not given in terms of principles. It, by and large, is given in terms of cold law. The Torah is not like that. The Torah is therefore meant to be studied, and not just by the lawyers and the judges among us, but everybody's obligated in Talmud Torah. So Yerushalmi says, Ilu nitna Torah hatucha. If the Torah was given just psak halacha, without the reasons why they came to the particular decision, as you find in the U.S. Code, I think in the annotated versions, they'll give some of the background, some of the discussions, depending on what the law is, where it came from. But the code itself is not like that. If the Torah was just a law book, la haysa la regla amida, could not have had any kiyum in this world. It would not have endured, because the Torah requires the capacity to be darshan lakan ulakan. And that's ve'elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim. So it's not that the Torah is limited in terms of action, in a sense. It's not limited in terms of intellectual possibility. And you see, the Yerushalmi continues that this troubled Moshe. Because Moshe said, Omar lefanav ribono shel olam, hodieni heichi halacha. Tell me what the halacha is. It's like someone comes and asks a shayla to the Rav, and he darshins. Some say this, some say that. Hodieni heichi halacha, just tell me what to do. I don't want to have to think about it. Tell me what to do. That's what Moshe said. Shlo yeh basafik, p'nei Moshe. Don't be any doubt. Amar lo, God said to Moshe, no, achi rabim lahatas. You follow the majority. Whatever the majority is, kidei shefei haTorah nidreshes mem tespanim tamei, mem tespanim tahor. So Torah can be expounded either way in terms of tumah or tahara. Why is that? So then I quoted the Maharal that, you see, it's not possible that everybody should think alike. People's minds are different. Since people's minds are different, and shiv and panim laTorah, people are capable of extracting each pun, each dimension of the Torah. The Torah is not unidimensional. It's multidimensional. In that case, it seems that the machlokas is not something negative, but something positive. Machlokas reflects the variety of intellectual life amongst humanity, certainly amongst the Jewish people. So therefore, it's something that should be praised. Now, if you look at the Jewish people, so if you look at the core areas of Jewish life, like Shabbos and Kashrus and let's say Mamonis, all right? So you have Machlokes on Pratim, on details. Sometimes those details will be on Mitzvos Derabanan. You know the machlokas, for example, on what's part of the 39 malachos. There's no machlokas on that. Nor is there any machlokas really on in most areas of kashrus. There will be machlokas, will be differences on chumras, on stringencies, on minhogim, on developments, on siogim, on fences that different generations put on the various mitzvahs in the Torah. So that accounts for the diversity. But the big difference is that those do not become, contrary to what many hold today, those do not become an integral, essential part of Torah. The Chazal were very careful always to make distinctions, in fact, even to underscore in the Gemara what's derabana, what's doraisa. Not because the chiyuv is different. The Jew is obligated to follow the mitzvah derabana as well as the mitzvah doraisa. The chiyuv is the same. The obligation is the same. What's different, though, is in the way we perceive it. And in fact, Chazal made it formulaic. Safek Rabbanon l'kula. Safek d'oraisa l'chumra. Why? Because that d'oraisa is the core of the Torah. that is immutable. The Darabanans are not. The Darabanans could be theoretically adjusted from generation to generation. We've seen it based on Zgadah B'chochmah V'minyan. That's a technicality. But theoretically it's subject. Chazal were very careful to maintain the hierarchy of the Torah versus the Darabanan. So therefore, Safek Darabanan L'kula and a host of other areas as well. So in fact, when we look at the mitzvahs d'rabbanon, it's not a, or even the minhagim, it's not a change in the Torah. There can't be any change, but rather the diversity is implicit in the Torah. And I think this is a critical point to understand tonight. When we speak of hetek haTorah, or the lack of bitul haTorah, that the Torah can never be abrogated, it does not mean the Torah is monolithic. It means that there is a great variety, a diversity within the Torah, but nonetheless, the system itself remains pristine. The protocol for analyzing and interpreting the Torah remains uniform. That's not subject to the whims of every generation. That has to be made completely clear. That's not something grafted onto the Torah. That's part of the system of Torah. When there's a machlokes, so we have the ability to resolve it. We did have the ability. When we lost the ability to resolve it after the Churban, when the Sanhedrin is buckled, so therefore we're in a weakened state, there's no doubt. When the Sanhedrin will be reestablished, we'll be in a stronger position, and we'll be able to make Jewish life much more uniform. But the fact is, for the most part, we're able to, and Pesach is a big issue because of Kitnios, but for the most part, we're able to eat in each other's homes and marry each other, so for all the great distinctions in Jewish life, particularly the communities of Ashkenaz and Sfarad, nonetheless, I don't want to sound like a hackneyed old man, but the fact is what unites us is much greater than what divides us. The divisions are relatively minute when you look at the great unity of the system itself. So why is this a Yesod? What's so important about the immutability of Torah? So turn the page. Look at number 10, in Emunas Vadeus of Rapsajagon, and again, you'll thank me, I spared you the original Arabic. So Rapsaja wrote, after all the aforesaid, I deem it proper to have the remarks that have been made followed by discussion of the subject of the abrogation of the law. It's an appropriate place for it. The children of Israel have a general tradition to the effect that the prophets had informed them that the laws of the Torah were not subject to abrogation. They assert, furthermore, we've heard this view expressed so explicitly as to brook no misunderstanding or misinterpretation, but it's clear, the Torah can never change. Zos haTorah lo tivatel. By careful study of the scriptures, I found considerable support for this thesis. First of all, those many laws that attach them to such phrases as Ludor HaSeichem, alright, Bris Olam, eternity, doesn't change. Torah Tivonah Moshe, Marasha Kilos Yaakov, it's an inheritance from one generation to the next. Furthermore, is one of the most famous statements in the Munas Vadeos, our nation of the children of Israel is a nation only by virtue of its laws. Ein umosenu umo elo haTorah. What makes us a nation is the Torah. All right, that is to say, the essence of Klal Yisrael is that we're the Am haTorah. If the Torah could change, that would mean our fundamental definition as a people would be fluid and impermanent, and that cannot be. Since then, the Creator has stated that the Jewish nation was destined to exist as long as heaven and earth would exist. Its laws would of necessity have to endure as long as would heaven and earth. So just like there's a permanence to heaven and earth, as God wills it, there's a permanence to Torah as well. And if we would seek to make those changes, then in fact, what we're doing is trampling on something that is divine, and more to his point, we're basically undermining the very rationale for our existence as a people. Im labrisi yomo v'laylo, chuko shmai v'aretz, lo samti, as the Navi says. If not for my covenant with the Jewish people, so then what do we even need heaven and earth for? There'll be no purpose to creation. Right. Well, you see, part of the problem that we have, of course, is that our co-religionists don't accept this particular understanding of the Masorah. To a great extent, that defines them as people who reject the Masorah. Obviously, the conservatives pay lip service to it even as they change it. Reform don't even pay lip service to it, but it's a problem. I told a little story this morning that I repeat now because it's relevant. I taped a TV show last week that will appear sometime in February with a group of other rabbis. I was the only Orthodox rabbi. Of the others, one was Reformed, two were conservative, and all of them said they would perform same-sex marriages. I dissented. But the difference between them was the Reform said that she would perform anything, care, it didn't matter, but the conservative said they would not perform a homosexual intermarriage. Had to be two Jewish men, not one Jewish man and one non-Jewish man. So I said that, you know, explain something to me. The same Torah that prohibits intermarriage prohibits same-sex marriage. So what are we talking about here? And there was dead silence. Of course, you can't have silence on a TV show, so I'm not sure how they're going to edit it. But there was dead silence, because there is no answer to that question. And to say how the Masorah is distorted, the Reform rabbi said that she's guided by one principle in her support of homosexuality. She said, the Torah says, it is not good for man to be alone. So I said, yes, but read a little further. Therefore it says, he should leave his parents, v'dovakta ishto, so cleave to his wife, not cleave to another man. But they didn't get that far. But you see, that's a problem when you just take the Torah very superficially and pick and choose and don't see it as permanent or as immutable. So it doesn't really provide a grounding in either morals or practice, because everything becomes relative and everything changes, and what's 100 years from now will bear no relation to what the Torah is today. It always has to change. Maral says in number 12, it's a very important parak, parak Nun Aleph in Teferes Yisrael, Yesh m'bnei Adam asher lo b'bnei Yisrael, there are people who are not Jews, Hema chashvu ke'in ha-Torah nitzchis kidatenu. They felt the Torah is not eternal, as we maintain. Basher mitzvah harbe yefshe l'kayim osam, kim ba'aretz, binyan beis ha-b'chira. Because there are many mitzvahs that you can only perform in Eretz Yisrael, or when there's a beis ha-mikdosh. U'lekach omru ki eichav shar sha-Torah nitzchis, kasher yefshe l'on l'kayim harbe mehem. So they said, how could the Torah be eternal if so many mitzvahs cannot be fulfilled today? By the way, it's not an implausible argument. If you think about the Tariq mitzvahs, alright, how many mitzvahs are there? Positive commandments? Let's say 248. Ramach. 248. Of the 248, how many mitzvahs can we really perform today? I think the numbers are 50 or 60. Maybe a fifth. A fifth of them. Most of them simply cannot be performed because we lack the base of mikdash. So if that's the case, how could the Torah be nitzvahs? So of course it's a nice question, but a nice question has an even nicer answer, because that's the system of Torah. You can't take something out of the Torah. You can't maintain that, as the others do, that the Beis HaMikdash will never be rebuilt, will never be Karbanos, etc. That you can't maintain. That's Kfira. But to say that these are the laws of the Torah, but now we are incapable of fulfilling them, so that's no different then Sukkot's coming and a person can't find an Esrog. It doesn't mean the laws of Dalet Minim no longer exist. It means we lack the capacity to fulfill them in this given situation. So too here. The broader point the Maral is making is next. Gam omru kein ator mashlemes adam rak bekiyim kol ha-mitzvos. V'yavar achas mem ki adover asher hu sholem roshi yibulit ha-sefes v'chisaron. They also say that the Torah completes, perfects a person only when you can perform all of them. And that's why you can't add or subtract. But if the Torah is no longer capable of being fully observed, then in fact it no longer perfects people and therefore has to be abandoned. Whose philosophy was that? So clearly that was the Christian philosophy. Maintain that since the mitzvahs cannot be performed anymore in toto, therefore the whole system had to be displaced by something else, that something else being faith in their man-god. But of course that's fear, that's heresy. So Maral is saying that some think the Torah is not eternal because we can't fulfill all of it, but in fact the Torah is perfect. the situation we're in is not perfect. People are not perfect. That's why there's the Torah. Now this notion is buttressed by the Rambam in number 13. It's the third chalik of the Mora, Perek Lamed Dalad. Whatever the law teaches, whether it be of intellectual or moral or practical character, is founded on that which is the rule and not on that which is the exception. It ignores the injury that might be caused to a single person through a certain maxim or a certain divine precept. Now this is a very important point. I don't want to gloss over it. The Rambam is making a very sharp and very important point here. And that is to say, the halacha, as it's determined, focuses on the rov, like any law must. The law of in any society, it focuses on the rov, that the rov will find it beneficial, even if in a particular case, an individual might not. An individual might suffer harm. All right? So give an example. We have roles in Jewish life. Take the less offensive one between Kohen and Levim and Yisraelim. If a Levi Yisroel be so passionate he wants to perform the Avodah, well, he can't. The law actually discriminates and says only the Kohen can do certain things. And that's it. So a person might feel injured by his inability to fully express his spiritual needs. So he feels the injury, but the rove don't, because that's how the Torah is set up. Or to give the more common expression today, in terms of the big women's issues that arise in society, it could be that a particular woman is upset by the role the Torah has assigned to her. There is some flexibility. Some things are not osur, but it is not mandatory on her. Some things are not to be done. But you see, certain things shouldn't be done. The talis, for example. So we don't really have that much in our world, although on the leftist fringe of orthodoxy you have these things as well. But there's no doubt the way any law is to be structured, it's going to benefit the rove, not necessarily every single person. And if someone chafes under it, then it's a unique situation. So that's, Bruria, that's Michal Bashol, that becomes Rashi's daughters. That becomes the Rebbetzin of Ludomir. Whatever, you have these yechidot, and you can deal with them as well. And one of the issues that was raised on the show, which I find quite tedious today, is about women's Talmud Torah. He said, you see, the Torah changes because women never learned, and today they learn. And I said, it's a long issue. You can't really reduce it to a soundbite, but the point is it didn't change. I said there was no formal Talmud Torah for men in Europe, much less women. There's no formal learning for non-Jewish men, much less for non-Jewish women, until the 20th century. So when education became structured, formalized, even mandated, so it became natural. You see, throughout our history you had women, not everyone, probably not even most, but you always had women who were learned in Torah. Always. And the examples I mentioned before are just typical. Yet many women who are learned, there are certain restrictions on what can be learned, or more who can teach it. It's really av and bas, more than anything else. But nonetheless, it wasn't as if it was a dramatic halachic change. It was a dramatic sociological change. The system always provided for it. But Gemara says that we speak about in the time of the second base of Mikdash, there wasn't anything, I think Gemara says a ben or bas from the north to the south who didn't know Taros. It says bas too, not just ben, if I remember correctly. But you see, it was a sociological change more than it was a halachic change. Granted, we are sometimes averse even to sociological changes, not just halachic changes. But nonetheless, we have to make the distinction and be careful about it. So the law exists and it targets the rove, not every particular yachid. For the law is a divine institution, continuing in the Morah. And in order to understand its operation, we must consider how in nature the various forces produce benefits which are general, but in some solitary cases they cause also injury. This is clear from what has been said by ourselves as well as others. Consequently, we shouldn't be surprised to find that the object of the law does not fully appear in every individual. There must naturally be people who are not perfected by the instruction of the law, just there are beings which do not receive from the specific forms of nature all that they require. All this comes from one God, kulam nitnu miro echod. It's impossible to be otherwise. impossible. And we already explained that which is impossible always remains impossible and never changes. From this consideration, it also follows that the laws cannot, like medicine, vary according to the different conditions of persons and times. While the cure of a person depends on his particular constitution at the particular time, the divine guidance contained in the law must be certain in general, although it may be effective in some cases and ineffective in others. If you think about it, the Torah is given to us as a series of 613 principles. Those are basic principles that give us good guidelines, but we have to know how to apply them in each particular case. But the application may vary with the generation within the system, but the application is based on precise formulae that we have. If the law depended on the varying conditions of man, it would be imperfect in its totality, each precept being left indefinite. For this reason, it would not be right to make the fundamental principles of the law depend on a certain time, a certain place. On the contrary, statute judgments must be definite, unconditional, and general. Mishpat echad yelochem, kager kozrachia, for all persons and for all times. In other words, Rambam is saying, Torah Hashem tamima. God's Torah is perfect, but the law would not be perfect if it was subject to change. So we have to understand that it's possible for Torah Jews to be imperfect. That's true. Not everyone grasps every idea. Not everyone internalizes every idea. Just like not every person grasps every benefit that exists in nature. But in terms of the Torah itself, if the Torah had to change with every person in every generation, then it would not be a Torah, much less perfect. Rav Yosef Albo, I didn't cite it, but I have it here, writes, L'fisha davar hashove v'asholem, something which is equal and perfect, yifshar lahosif olo v'lo gra mimenu, you can't add to it or subtract from it, shal yifsad hashivu v'ashlemus. If you start tampering with perfection, then it's no longer perfect. V'havdil, like the masterpiece of a Rembrandt, if you think you want to add a little more to it, then in the end you have only ruined it. Just finishing the Maharal in number 15, the Maharal says that v'nei nitzchias ha-tor mevur b'mofes bor etzleinu ki ha-tor min ha-shem yisbarach v'nitzad ha-mekabel en ha-re'uyo ki ha-odom hu-bal guf v'gesha him lo shi matona la-odom promotion is bor lefneza. The Maharal is a very interesting way of understanding it. He says, because the Torah is min ha-shamayim, it has to be nitzchis, it has to be eternal, and it has to be unchanging, because God is nitzchi, and God is not subject to any change. And in fact, ha-Torah hui min ha-shem yisbarach, eich yeh ledover zeh shinui v'chilof, since it comes from God, who is unchanging, the Torah can't be changeable either. The only way it would be changeable is if the mekabel of the Torah was a gavra in terms of the production of the Torah. Dima Torah mitzad mekabel efshaki mekabel hu mishtane. Avol adavah shu mitzad o'ilo kamoshi ha-Torah shu mitzad o'ilo imkein eich efshah shi'il ledavar zashinoi. Very interestingly, he says the Torah is defined by God as the giver and not by Klal Yisrael as the mekabel. The Mekabel play no role in the substance of Torah. That's what it means, Kofalim Harkagigis, that God held the Torah over our heads. The whole Torah is defined by the Nosein HaTorah, and with no input from the Mekabel HaTorah. I missed one point, and that's the Chinuch in 16, we're speaking about Machlotos. So the Sefer Chinuch writes in Tav Tzadi Vav on Motosur, Nisharshe HaMitzvah, L'tishadeh Sponei Odom Chalukim Zemizeh, because people think differently. Everyone has a different mind, and therefore it's impossible to harmonize or to synchronize the thoughts of every individual. That can't be. If God knew the Torah was given to every person to interpret and to apply, then everyone, Yefarsh Kol Echad Mehem Divrei Torah Kefi Svar Aso, V'yaber Machlokas B'yusor Mashmos HaMitzvos. So we would have a people. The Jewish world would be rife with Machlokas, even more than it is. Betasta Torah, Kikama Torah. See, if there's a lot of machlokas in Jewish life, I don't mean just some personal arguments, but machlokas in Torah, if there's a lot, and we have the system, and we have some mechanisms of resolution, and nonetheless there are machlokas, alachaskan lakama, how many more disputes, how much less uniform would the Torah be if in fact the Torah was subject to the input of the Makabel? What about the other religions of the world? So we'll conclude with this. The Rambam writes in Igeres Taimon, this was a big, in both Christianity and Islam, this was a major deviation. In fact, I want to say it's the essence of the religions, but certainly it was a prerequisite. Without this, the abrogation of this particular yisod, they could not exist. So in Igeres Taimon, the Rambam writes, the reason why we don't believe the prophets of any Arab, it's not because they're not our brothers. Because they are commanding us through their so-called prophecies to nullify part of the Torah. Others, but we're already convinced from Moshe's time, the Mamet Sinai, Shatar Zosli Yashib Yadenu, Lotishunev, Lotuklap, the Torah Cheres. The Torah cannot change, the Torah cannot be, cannot deviate at all. But nonetheless, these faiths came and made these changes. In fact, posited that the Torah is what it was, but it should no longer be as it is. And that's why their religion stepped into that breach. The bottom right is number 11, the famous censored Rambam at the end of Hilchos Malachim, it's Perek Yudalef, Halacha Dalid. The Rambam says, V'yimos HaMashiach, Af Yeshua HaNotzri, Shadim Moshiya Mashiach Menarek Bevestin, even Yeshua HaNotzri, Jesus of Nazareth, who thought he was the Messiah, and he was killed by the Sanhedrin. For Nisdav Nisnabe Bo Daniel, Daniel already prophesied about him. Uvnei Faritze Amcha Yinasu Lahamet Chazom Yinachshalu. And the children of the lawless ones in your nation, they'll exalt themselves, have their own vision, and they'll stumble. V'chi Yesh Mechshal Darol Nisa. Is there a greater stumbling than this? Shekol HaNeviim Dibru Shemashiach Gol Yisrael Moshiyam. All the Neviim prophesied that the Messiah would redeem Israel, save them, gather our exiles, Mechazek Mitzvoson, strengthen our mitzvos, V'zeh, and this Yeshu, Gorem La'abed Yisrael Becher, he caused us to be destroyed by the sword, L'fazer Sher Yisrael Moshfilom, and to be scattered, the remnant to be scattered and to be humiliated, U'la'achuf HaTorah, and to exchange the Torah for something else, Ulahatos Rov Olam Lavor Elokam Ibalde Hashem, and to cause the world to err and serve another God instead of the true God. But he says, there's a very famous passage, Avol Machshavos Borei Olam Ein Koach Bado Masigam. We don't really understand God's ways fully. Lo Drachenu Drachov Moshe Sein Machshavosav Vechad Var Ma'il Yeshua Sheli Yeshua Hanotzri. And all the matters of Jesus and the Arab after him, Muhammad, Eino Elo Yashar Derech HaMelech HaMashiach, all that is to smooth the way, to pave the way to the true Messiah, Ulasakin Olam Kul Avodas Hashem B'Yachad, and to perfect the world, to all serve God together. How so? So this passage is subject to great misinterpretation today as well amongst the Jewish left. It's not that the Rambam thought that there was truth in Christianity, as some of my colleagues want to say. No, he says the exact opposite. It's not that there's truth in them, but there's a value, there's a purpose in them for the non-Jews. The purpose was the end of paganism. And in fact, Christianity and Islam were tremendously accomplished in ridding the world, or at least minimizing the expressions of paganism in mankind. So Kesad, how do they do this? Kvar nismali ha'olam kulu medivrei Mashiach medivrei ha'Torah medivrei mitzvos. Once they accepted the Torah, notwithstanding that they distorted and deviated from it, but the world already knows the Bible. They know the stories, they know the commandments, it's extant to Iyim Rechokim across the globe, the missionaries go, even where Chabad doesn't go. Uvamim rabim arlei leg, many nations of uncircumcised heathens. They all know about Pesach and Mishpatim and Karbanos and Shabbos. They know about it. Some say that the mitzvahs were true, but no longer Christians. Some saying some saying they existed, but they're allegories. We understand that Islam, but at least they're speaking about it. Mashiach will come and reveal these hidden areas. I'm sorry, and they said that he's already come and he's revealed some of it and he'll come again. Notice they both speak in terms of a future Messiah, the second coming or the 12th Imam. When the true Melech HaMashiach arises, and he'll be successful and he'll be elevated and crowned, so that at least they'll recognize the area, the parsha. Miyad hen kulam chosim yodim. They all know shesh sheker machlova sayim, that they in fact will bequeath falsehood. He says it's false. Ushenaviyehim avaseim hitum, and their prophets and their fathers misled them. But nonetheless, there's a difference between being misled and being taught falsehoods and not understanding, not being aware of the basic area. So in fact, this yesod strikes at the heart of the attempts to destroy Yahdus, both from within and from without, and as an admonition to all Jews, including those who've abrogated the Torah with the philosophy of Christianity or its derivatives, that in fact the Torah never changes. And that's the Ani Mamin, Zos HaTorah Lo Tiyeh Mukhlefes. This Torah will never change. Lo Tiyeh Torah Cheres Meis HaBorei. And God is not going to come and give us another Torah. That will not happen. But rather, Zos Torah Moshe Lo Tibatel. Alright, I thank you all very much. Next week, we'll get to the important 10th Yesod. I thank you. V'lchol HaMazinim.